The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Greetings, everyone. I'm Jennifer Green for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Teen Magazines. For the next half hour, I will be reading to you from theteenmagazine.com and teenvogue.com. Our first article today from teenvogue.com, Student Loan Forgiveness and Payment Pause, What's Happening and What Will Biden Do? And this article was written by Frederick Bell, Jr. Editor's Note, on June 30th, the Supreme Court rejected President Joe Biden's Student Loan Forgiveness Proposal 6-3. Let's finish this job. I know we can. President Joe Biden says in the April video launching his re-election campaign. In it, Biden shakes hands with black elders, black youths wearing re-election T-shirts, and politicians walk across the Edmund Pettus Bridge in Selma, Alabama. As a black student debtor who was promised student debt relief during Biden's presidency, I am angry that Biden not only has not finished that particular job, but botched it at every step. As an organizer with Debt Collective, I am channeling my anger into providing a roadmap of what has happened so far, what borrowers can expect, and how the administration can fix their mistakes. In March, House Republicans introduced a resolution designed to take down Biden's debt relief program. In particular, they wanted to block loan forgiveness and rescind the moratorium protections on student debt payments initially instituted by the Trump administration during the COVID-19 pandemic. Predictably, Biden vetoed the bill, but he left the fate of working-class Americans on the table during the recent debt ceiling negotiations instead of invoking the 14th Amendment to raise the debt limit without involving Congress, which could have won the respect of young black voters like me, who were promised targeted relief. Biden's handling of the debt ceiling fight casts doubt on his ability to see things through, for anyone who still thought he possessed that ability. To recap, the federal government usually spends more than it budgets, so once it nears the limit, the pressure is on to raise the debt ceiling or risk the U.S. defaulting on its financial obligations. Since both Republicans and Democrats recognize the economic catastrophe a possible default would cause, from a stock market crash, delays in Social Security checks, to a surge in home prices, they prioritize and politicize these negotiations by demanding concessions from each other. In this case, Biden and House Speaker Kevin McCarthy cut a last-minute deal to suspend the debt limit until 2025. Using working-class families as bargaining chips, Biden's bipartisan deal increases work requirements for recipients of food assistance programs, expedites the Mountain Valley Pipeline, codifies a definitive end to the student loan payment pause, and restricts the administration's authority to initiate another pause. Agreeing to turn payments back on is bad. There's a lot of evidence that proves people are going to struggle to make their payments and that defaults are going to spike. But it's even worse than that. While the White House boasted that the debt ceiling deal saved Biden's popular student debt relief plan to grant federal borrowers up to $20,000 in relief, the reality is the program was already on shaky ground. Shortly after the program was announced, multiple right-wing lawsuits were filed to block the program. While many were dismissed, two of those suits made it to the Supreme Court, which is expected to issue a decision this month. The two sets of plaintiffs include a pair of students who claim that Biden's plan discriminates against borrowers who did not receive federal Pell Grants, as well as those with private student loans, and six Republican state attorneys general claiming it will have a negative financial impact on certain state-run programs and the states themselves. According to the Roosevelt Institute, a progressive think tank, the attorneys general failed to provide sufficient evidence that student debt cancellation would actually harm their bottom line. Student debt advocates like the Debt Collective expect the conservative-controlled court to come back with an unfavorable decision. But the president still has the power to cancel student debt, even if the SCOTUS case goes the wrong way. In other words, Biden has options, and inaction cannot be one of them. The cases before the Supreme Court are not about the legality of student debt relief in general, but rather the specific legal authority Biden used, namely the HEROES Act. Fortunately, there are other legal tools available. For example, since 2020, student lending experts and activists have consistently communicated to White House officials that using the compromise and settlement power in the Higher Education Act of 1965 is a robust and viable option for broad-based student loan cancellation. That legislation states that the Department of Education can enforce, pay, compromise, waive, or release any right, title, claim, lien, or demand related to federal student debt. While using this power could also present legal challenges, organizers, borrowers, and elected officials have been clamoring for relief and offering solutions for years. Still, the president has either responded slowly or failed to do so altogether. Approval of the debt ceiling deal means borrowers will need to begin making payments in October, with interest accruing starting on September 1. During the almost 3.5-year moratorium, several large student loan servicers have exited their contracts with the Department of Education, which will result in confusion and disorganization. Borrowers should check studentaid.gov to see if their loans have been transferred to a new servicer and ensure their account reflects accurate dates and information. More than 40 million borrowers who were eligible for relief and 16 million people who were told by the government their applications were approved will be in the horrible position of having loans reinstated that the administration promised to erase. This will predictably disproportionately harm working class, young, Black, and Latinx borrowers. Alternatively, Biden can decisively implement a Plan B, pursuing another legal avenue to deliver promised relief. This is a critical fork in the road. As it stands, the moratorium on payments was negotiated away to the Republicans. Our relief is in the hands of what I consider to be an illegitimate Supreme Court, and the administration seems to lack a definitive strategy on this issue. As the 2024 election nears, Biden must keep debtors in mind as he seeks re-election after years of stalling and falling short. Long-shot 2024 presidential candidates Cornel West and Marianne Williamson, both supporters of broad-scale cancellation, could rattle Biden's re-election prospects if they justifiably highlight this administration's student debt cancellation fiasco. 43 million debtors are waiting for the relief they were promised by this administration. Biden doing nothing if his program is blocked would be as if NBA player Nikola Jokic and the Denver Nuggets threw in the towel after the Miami Heat tied up the series in Game 2 of the best-of-seven finals. You still have 5 games left. Let's play to win and finish the job. Our next article from the teenmagazine.com. Here's why sunscreen needs to be your best friend this summer. And this article was written by Arisha Ahmed. Picture this. It's a warm, sunny day. You're 8 years old, at the beach, and itching to jump into the glittering blue ocean or to build a sand castle that reaches the sky. The only thing delaying you is the fact that your mum's insisting on smothering you in thick white sunscreen before you go, despite your vehement protests that you don't need it. If this is a scene that strikes you as familiar, let it be known that you're not the only one. For many of us, one of the few downsides of sunny days in our childhood was that our parents wouldn't let us go outside until we put on sunscreen. We would eye the greasy liquid disdainfully, maybe even subtly wiping it off behind our mum's backs if we got the chance, not understanding or caring why we were being made to wear it. But with age comes wisdom, and so maybe it's time to finally admit it. Our parents were right. Sunscreen really is important enough to wait a little bit longer before running into the ocean or building a sandcastle. Those extra few seconds it takes to put some sunscreen on can give your skin hours of protection from the sun. This article will delve into what exactly sunscreen does and why it's so important to put on every day. Hopefully, by the time you've finished reading, you'll have a full understanding of why sunscreen needs to be your best friend this summer. To begin, what is sunscreen? To put it simply, sunscreen is a skin product that contains active ingredients that reduce the impact of the sun's ultraviolet, UV, radiation on your skin. This in turn decreases the chances of your skin getting sun damaged. Sunscreen can come in numerous different forms, including lotions, sprays, sticks, and oils, meaning you can get whichever you think is best suited for you. Maybe sprays for convenience, or sticks if you don't like the thick feel of lotion. Professionals recommend that you apply sunscreen to all areas of your skin that will be exposed to the sun to ensure maximum protection across your body. However, make sure not to rely on sunscreen alone for protection. Ideally, you should try to avoid being in direct sunlight and seek the shade when the sun is at its strongest. Sunscreen just acts as an extra barrier against the sun that allows you to be in it without feeling its effects as much. What are the benefits of applying sunscreen? There are dozens of reasons why wearing sunscreen is so important, but to name a few of the biggest, sunscreen reduces your chance of skin cancer. One study whose findings were published in the British Journal of Cancer suggests that 86% of melanoma skin cancer cases in Britain are caused by overexposure to UV radiation. Sunscreen reduces the impact of UV radiation and can therefore decrease the chances of an individual developing skin cancer. Decreases signs of aging. UV radiation can cause the skin to discolor and wrinkle as a person gets older. While sunscreen is not able to keep you eternally young, it can stave off the development of lines and skin sagging. Prevents sunburn. Prolonged exposure to the sun can result in sunburn, which is when the skin becomes inflamed and painful. In extreme cases of sunburn, the skin can even peel. Sunscreen is a crucial tool that can stop this from happening. Maintain your skin's health. Sunscreen protects the skin's proteins, such as collagen and keratin, helping to maintain smooth, even skin. How often should sunscreen be applied? How frequently sunscreen should be applied depends on the sun protection factor, SPF, used. SPF is rated on a numeral scale, typically ranging from 10 to 50, with SPF 15 being the lowest recommended for daily use. The higher the SPF used, the longer the effects of the sunscreen will last. Hence, the higher the used, the better, especially on very sunny days. As a general rule, you should try to put sunscreen on at least 30 minutes before you leave the house and try to apply it every 2 hours. Which sunscreen should I use? There are so many different brands and products out there that it can be difficult to know which one to go for. If you're finding the huge breadth to choose from intimidating, here are some recommendations, complete with pros and cons. Banana Boat Sport Ultra Sunscreen Lotion, SPF 30. A relatively cheap sunscreen that is water-resistant for up to 80 minutes, making it ideal for beach days. However, the tube is relatively small, meaning it would likely run out fast and would need to be frequently repurchased. Bondi Sands Sunscreen Lotion, SPF 50. Has a high SPF, making it longer-lasting. It is also fragrance-free and hence well-suited for sensitive skin. However, a few of the reviews warn that it may leave the skin greasy. Elta MD UV Clear Face Sunscreen, SPF 46. Another sunscreen with a high SPF that is suitable for sensitive skin, although it is on the more expensive side. Milani Make It Last Sunscreen Setting Spray, SPF 30. Can be used on top of makeup, making it convenient to reapply throughout the day. But be warned, some of the reviews suggest it has a strong, although not necessarily bad, scent. Hopefully, this article has helped you to understand why wearing sunscreen is so important. With summer upon us, you should make sure that a bottle of sunscreen becomes a permanent fixture in your bag. Getting into the habit of wearing sunscreen can be hard, but doing small things like trying to incorporate it into your everyday skincare regime and putting reminders on your phone to reapply it throughout the day can help make it easier. Remember, putting on sunscreen may be annoying in the short term, but it will benefit you in the long term. Here's to healthy and dewy skin. Our next article today from theteenmagazine.com. Celebrity gossip can be entertaining, but it harms us to read this guff. And this article was written by Maha. Shakira found half-eaten strawberry jam in the fridge. Gwyneth only eats bone broth for lunch. Haley mocks Selena's laminated eyebrows in an Instagram story. Taylor's career is at an all-time high, but let's just talk about her dating life. The press about these individuals' lives is constant because media users are deeply invested into other people's lives. At first, these tabloid pieces, videos, and posts seem petty and a relatively harmless source of entertainment. After all, we're just spectators from afar enjoying a juicy narrative unfold without being directly involved. We are attracted to these stories, and we like choosing sides. But it got me thinking and wondering, has our curiosity of celebrities turned into something darker? Since a young age, my Islamic upbringing has taught me to cover the faults of others. The verse, "Avoid much speculation, for suspicion in some cases is a sin, and spy not nor backbite one another," 49:13. Has always been ingrained in me. It wasn't until recently that I reflected on how indulging in internet gossip can have the same harm as it does in real life. Every month, it seems like there's new internet gossip. With little insight into celebrities' lives, people get so invested into these stories that they resort to creating theories and spreading misinformation. Soon, public discourse and speculations quickly turn into nasty, toxic commentary filled with malicious mocking and threats. According to the APA dictionary, gossip is personal talk or communication of often unsubstantiated information. While talking with your friends about the latest celebrity breakup is probably relatively harmless, it is also another form of gossip. Gossip in our everyday lives has the same consequences as it does online when commenting on public figures. Like us, celebrities are normal people who feel hurt from toxic online comments and rumors. The reality is, we don't know anything about their lives, no matter how much we speculate. Using social media to target celebrities who are tagged in posts during intense periods can cause real mental harm without ever meeting them. We don't always see if we're hurting or uplifting in the process. Constance Wu is a reminder of how celebrity gossip can be harmful. During 2019, Wu attempted suicide after getting hate on social media. The backlash sparked after she expressed disappointment about her sitcom that was being renewed, tweeting that she was so upset right now that I'm literally crying. She was labeled ungrateful, among many other remarks, and Wu deleted the tweets apologizing and left social media for 3 years. To the outside observer, Wu is a famous actor who is far away enough from reality to be affected by some remarks made online. But we still don't know what the person on the other side of the screen is going through. Instead of participating in hurtful discourse, picking loyalties for our favorite public figures, or being tempted by juicy scandals, we should ask ourselves, why? Why does it matter? Why are we so invested in the lives of strangers? Why is it even our business? How would we feel if this kind of commentary was being spread about us? We will continue to struggle with handling the gossip in our day-to-day lives and to ignore what we are constantly being bombarded with by the media. If people did know the person they were exchanging theories and speculating about was struggling with their mental health, they'd be a lot nicer. But since we can't know one way or the other, we sacrifice only a meaningless source of entertainment by being kind. And our next article from TeenVogue.com, Barbie's Margot Robbie and Greta Gerwig argued with Mattel CEO who wanted to cut a scene. And this article was written by Sarah Delgado. Greta Gerwig's upcoming Barbie movie might be the epitome of La Vie en Rose, quite literally. But getting Mattel execs on board with the film's unconventional vision was not precisely a walk in the park. In a new interview with Time magazine, it was revealed that at one point, the COO and president of Mattel personally flew to London to argue with Margot Robbie and Greta Gerwig about a certain part of the movie. Though the film, which stars Robbie and Ryan Gosling, had been in production for a while, Richard Dixon, COO and president of Mattel, made the trek all the way to the British capital to visit the Barbie set and argue with Gerwig and Robbie about one scene in particular. ICYMI, the set for Barbie's Dreamhouse, is located in the Warner Brothers Studios lot in Leavesden, just outside London, where the Harry Potter film saga was filmed. And in fact, David Heyman, who also produced the HP saga, also joined the Barbie movie. But back to Dixon. While the scene he had a problem with was not made explicit to avoid spoilers ahead of the movie's premiere on July 21st, we know that Dixon had an immediate change of heart once the two reenacted the scene for him IRL. When you look on the page, the nuance isn't there. The delivery isn't there. Robbie explained about the situation. Could have been a Zoom call if you ask us, but oh well. Gerwig and Robbie were more than aware that their version of Barbie would not be an easy sell for Mattel. In fact, the director refers to the finished product as a goddamn miracle. So one direct confrontation alone is a win in the grand scheme of things. Speaking to Time, Gerwig admitted she had reservations about the movie getting greenlit from the get-go. She and filmmaker Noah Baumbach, who also happens to be her partner, worked on the script pre-pandemic after getting a history lesson on Barbie inventor Ruth Handler, as Time puts it, as well as a rundown of her sartorial history. Then the pandemic hit, and they kept developing the story without receiving any notes from Robbie's team at her production company, Lucky Chap. When I saw the script, I was like, they're never going to let us do this. This is really pushing it, Robbie admitted. But here we are. And our next article from TeenVogue.com, Maddie Ziegler says her mom, Melissa, apologized for putting her on Dance Moms. And this article was written by Kara Nesvig. Maddie Ziegler is opening up about her experience on Dance Moms, and she's starting the conversation with her own mother. The actor and dancer shared that her mother, Melissa Ziegler-Gassoni, actually apologized to her about her time on the popular Lifetime reality show, revealing that she started the conversation about its impact on her life on a recent appearance on Emily Ratajkowski's podcast, High Low with M. Rata. "Last year, I was having a really bad panic attack, and I called my mom, and things were coming up from the past, and she apologized to me," Ziegler shared. She was like, "I'm so sorry I put you through that. It's so sad because she would never want to hurt us, but none of us knew how crazy it would get." Ziegler was just 7 years old when she joined the show and became one of its breakout stars, and the pressure from both producers, who wanted drama for storylines, and the team itself started to weigh on her. Looking back, and a lot of people have started to say this, it's like, wow, she actually had the most pressure on her because she was like, "You're my girl, so you have to lead everyone to victory every time," which is just not sustainable, Ziegler recounted, appearing to address former coach Abby Lee Miller. Ziegler eventually left the show in 2016 and continued working closely with Sia, but the hectic pace of Dance Moms meant she lost a lot of her childhood to TV. Ziegler, who started dancing at age 2, says she blocked out a lot of her early years. "I've blocked out so much of my childhood that I actually don't know what my life was like even just before working," she told Ratajkowski. "It's weird to find out things that I did when I was younger on TikTok. I'll see people posting things of me, and I'm like, I don't even remember that." Ziegler has spoken about her relationship to the show that made her a household name before. She's clearly done a lot of reflecting on her Dance Moms experience and how it shaped her. In 2022, she told Cosmopolitan while Dance Moms helped catapult her to fame, she considered it a toxic environment and was ready to leave it behind. "My dance teacher taught that if you don't get the trophy, if you don't get the crown, you're less than, which is the worst way to train a kid. It carries into other life lessons," she shared. "We also weren't allowed to watch our competitors or be friends with them. I've had to unlearn a lot of those things." We've run out of time for today's episode of Teen Magazines. Be sure to listen next time. We hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Jennifer Green, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Teen Magazines is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call us at 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. We thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.